Welcome to Executive Tools, the Black Widow interviewing mistake. This cast answers these questions. What is the Black Widow interviewing mistake? How can I overcome the Black Widow interviewing mistake? And what is different about executive interviewing? Well, if you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. Here we go.
Have you started planning your team's development for next year? Well, don't wait. Manager Tools 2026 training calendar is open, offering in-person and virtual conferences designed to boost management, communication, and leadership skills. Secure the best dates for your team now and make next year your most productive yet. Visit us at manager-tools.com/training, and you can register and see our full conference calendar today.
Okay, Mark. I love the whole Black Widow analogy. We've already talked about Black Widow in another context. Today, we're going to talk about it relative to interviewing. So tell me what we're going to talk about here.
Yeah, so it's classic. You know, you're in an executive level interview. You're well prepared. You've done everything we recommend you do in our highly popular interviewing series of podcasts. You have all your accomplishments chosen that match the culture and role you're interviewing for. You can handle probing. You have good questions. You close. And you don't get the job two or three or four times in a row. And you start asking yourself, what the heck is going on? Right?
Yeah.
And the fact is, you've likely made the Black Widow interviewing mistake. You are still interviewing passively when an executive is expected to be an active leader. Executive roles require those people who can create a strategy for their division department rather than just waiting on guidance from the top. Most people don't realize that they've gotten used to, as an individual contributor, supervisor, as manager, maybe even senior manager, maybe even director, just waiting for guidance from the top and essentially playing within the box you're given. But that's not the job of an executive. If you haven't thought through what your goals for you or your new organization are going to be, and also how you're going to achieve them, you're not ready to win an offer out of an executive level interview or an executive search. You're not talking like an executive. So, simple outline. We're going to review the Black Widow mistake generally. Then we're going to actually define the Black Widow interviewing mistake, or basically the Black Widow mistake interviewing version. And then we're going to talk specifically about how to overcome it with a really specific example that I just helped somebody through that was successful. So there we go.
That's awesome. You're going to let us know later on how it worked out with your advice to this guy. Okay. Give us a quick review of what the Black Widow mistake is.
Yeah, that is where mid-level professionals fail to expand their self-development in concert with the changing responsibilities of their job. Because of your increased workload as you become a senior manager or a manager even, or director or whatever, you spend more time working, but you end up spending a lot of that time that you're working on internal goals, internal metrics, internal plans, and so on. Basically, because you've been fed stuff. Hey, you've been told what to do, maybe not how to do it, but you've been told what to do and given your guardrails and so on.
I see where this is going.
Yeah, exactly. And most managers would say, in response to this narrowing of their focus, the learning curve is really steep right now. I can only handle this internal stuff. And they're basically moving up the ladder by doing more than they did before, but with roughly the same theme that they had with their previous work, which is basically being given stuff to do and doing it, basically being a tactician. And this is represented visually in the Black Widow analogy as the bottom triangle of the Black Widow spider markings. Hopefully most people are familiar with a Black Widow, which has basically what amounts to an hourglass shape on its abdomen, on the female. And if you look at it and think about it, it can look like two triangles, one of which is inverted, and they overlap a little bit. And so if you squint a little bit, you could almost call it a figure eight, but it's actually the way to think about it as two triangles or, you know, sort of an odd diamond shape. And what happens is we narrow our own development to handle the problems we're facing. And those problems are largely internal as we're learning about the more responsibilities we have that go along with the more pay we're getting. And it comes down to questions like, how am I going to get this done? How am I going to have time to handle all these new responsibilities while also managing a larger organization? Hint, delegation, folks. When am I going to find time for developing my people? What does my boss want? He hardly seems to talk to me. And when he does, it's unclear what he wants. I've got to work harder on all of this. They're basically, in the spinning plates analogy, they're just spinning more plates. And they think, you know, that's what you do. And you're applying what you already know to bigger problems, but still bigger internal problems.
So where's the problem? I think a lot of managers and executives necessarily spend a lot of time on those things, getting things done. When does that become an issue?
Yeah, well, the problem is they're thinking about internal issues, how to get things done inside the organization. All of the internal focus feels normal. In fact, probably your peers are doing it as well. And it probably feels kind of good, like, okay, I've got more to do, but I know what I need to do. I just need to focus on it and drive it and drive it and drive it. And that's what you've been doing all of your career, although at a little bit more advanced level. You're learning more about how the organization runs. You're gaining some political skills. Maybe you're getting better at getting things done, getting more efficient. It's linear, the way your development pretty much has always been. But as you grow in height in your organization, as you move toward the top, you become part of Team One, the leadership engine of the entire organization. And leaders, executives, are expected to have an understanding of not just how things get done internally, but also the stuff that's going on outside. What forces, what trends, what events, what emerging technologies, what emerging markets mean for the entire company. This is an expected behavior for the rising professional, even though most companies don't talk about it. They simply do not. And it is represented in the Black Widow analogy by the inverted top triangle that slightly, again, overlaps or intersects with the bottom triangle. And at the same time that we're narrowing our focus because our role is getting bigger and we're applying skills we already know, our responsibilities are actually widening, and we're not cognizant of that, aware of it. The company doesn't say to do anything about it. Maybe you have more budget to go on an industry trip or something, but you decide, oh, I'm just going to move that budget over here, and that'll help me make my number this quarter because I just can't do it. I'm too busy managing things internally. So that's the Black Widow mistake.
Yeah, a lot of junior executives think of, we say about results and retention, right? They think about results as a function of what their organization produces, but all the results for the organization are external, right? Do people buy the product?
Yes, exactly. So now let's take that narrowing, when in fact your development should be widening, and apply it to the situation where you're interviewing for what is now clearly an executive job. And the Black Widow interviewing mistake is when a candidate interviews for that role and then fails because they used managerial rather than executive interviewing preparation standards. They don't prepare for questions about strategy and direction and leadership and decision-making. And by the way, folks, strategy is more than just picking a direction. It means planning for it as well. They don't think about all the things it will take to get there once you have responsibility for the strategy. And as I like to say, my favorite leadership quote of all time from John Brown, John Brown's Body, the famous free verse poem by Stephen Vincent Benet that won the Pulitzer Prize many years ago. And the block men die in unstrategic defiance of martial law because still used to just being men and not block parts. And the problem is, these people, these managers, these senior managers maybe, who aren't yet quite executives in their company, think they had a really good interview. There were a couple of questions that were a little fuzzy, like, hey, what's your plan once you take over? And they said something like, well, obviously it'll take me a while to get my feet on the ground, understand what the situation is, and so on.
Well, that went well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when the interview's over. because basically what they're doing is abdicating. They're saying, I'm not ready to be an executive. I haven't thought this through. I don't have a plan. I don't have a strategy. I don't know what I'm going to do to grow results, because you mentioned results and retention. For the executive, the responsibilities of the executive are not results and retention, but an extension of that, growing results and also developing future leaders.
I don't know what the competition looks like. I don't know what drivers are of this particular business.
Yes, that's right.
Okay, good.
Yeah, exactly. And so, therefore, you're not ready to do it. Now, people say, well, everything up until now has been fairly linear and fairly logical. Yeah, okay. And all you have to do is keep doing what you're doing and suddenly be made CEO, right? No, I don't think so. Now, how does the Black Widow mistake create a version of itself in executive interviews? Well, think about it for a second. Okay, whomever is interviewing you must evaluate your competency not in your previous jobs, but in your next role. And yes, behavioral interviewing suggests that the best way to predict future behavior is to review past behavior, but some of the behaviors you're going to be asked to do as an executive are simply different, fundamentally different than the things you've been doing up until now. And so they're going to have to ask you different questions. So at some point, those roles as an interviewer switch from being defined by internal criteria and start becoming driven by external results and forces, and the interviewer has to ask about those things. And if you think about it from the interviewer's point of view, you'll see it. Should you just give a candidate who's going to become an executive with responsibilities external to their department, division, or even maybe the entire company, should you give that candidate a standard interview just about their past experiences when their past experiences are not maybe the one or two most important things in this new role? You know, should you ask them about past accomplishments and then guess at the candidate's ability to do a completely different thing? Potentially one with bigger risks and less guardrails, a lot less guardrails? No, you wouldn't, no. Right? What you would do is not only assess their effectiveness in accomplishing previous responsibilities. We're not going to let you be an executive just because you have great ideas, but you haven't done your job well. We're going to analyze your previous accomplishments, but we're also going to look at your ability to lead, to chart a course, to make decisions with imperfect and incomplete information. You'd ask questions to allow the candidate to show that they have already thought about what the problems and potential solutions are for this role now and into the future, and they have a rough plan for how they're going to make the future happen. You cannot be a VP and promote somebody from manager to director, let's say, which is an executive role in your organization, and have them be a good follower. The VP can't be running her business and then also trying to manage a bunch of followers whom she would hope are going to be fellow leaders, right? Not followers, leaders. And so what happens in a Black Widow interview is the candidate prepares for the interviews they've always had. They think about internal questions, the tactical accomplishments. But the interviewer, in addition to talking about that stuff, also conducts a different external and more strategically facing interview. And as we mentioned before, when the interviewer asks these executive level questions, the candidate doesn't have prepared answers because they're not prepared, because they haven't figured out that they're moving up the chain and their responsibilities are expanding. And now they're going to have to make the fundamental jump from follower to leader, from manager to executive. Nor are they ready to take the risk of stating their plan for the new organization. They might have an idea. I don't like what my boss does here or what she does there or whatever. But they're afraid of doing that because they have so little information and they're not prepared with an answer, so they're not going to give you one. Well, they have ideas or thoughts, but they're not going to give them to you. And even just that, not being prepared and not having an answer, regardless of whether you know it's right or wrong, is enough to fail you out of an executive interview.
Right. In a role where that requires all those things.
Yes, exactly.
Looking for fresh ideas from leaders at the top of their game? The Manager Tools Executive Speaker Series brings you candid conversations with executives across industries. Learn how they tackle complex challenges, build teams, and drive results. Don't miss our next session. As an Executive Tools license, you're invited to join us at our next call and listen for the audio of that call in your licensee-only personalized RSS feed after the call itself.
All right, so we know what the problem is now. How do we overcome this Black Widow interviewing mistake?
Yeah, it's really pretty simple. To be successful in an executive interview, you got to prepare both in the standard way, but also for executive level questions, which may not have a right answer. This is one of the fundamental problems, I'll tell you, Mike. Ever since we put out Executive Tools, the more conversations I have, the fundamental issue is this issue of there's not a right answer. And in fact, I had one person say, you know, Manager Tools made it even harder for me to be an executive because you guys were just the right answer. And so I just do what you told me to do. So, well, I hope you thought it through and understand that our guidance is not just the right answer, but it's the right answer for a host of reasons that are directly descended from the fundamental purpose of the organization and the organizational structure and the chain of leadership and authority and so on, and interpersonal relationships and so on.
Right.
But people don't always think that. They're looking for a tool. They find the tool. And they use it.
That's interesting.
I joked with somebody once. I said, you don't understand the difference between a wrench and a ratchet, right? They don't understand the difference between a standard wrench that you have to turn and then return and a ratchet, which stays on the nut and actually, or the bolt, and actually turns and, you know, has a mechanism by which you don't have to take it off and move it around if you're in a tight space or something like that. They didn't get that at all.
I would hope people would graduate from, like, I love the fact that this person was following our guidance and doing what we suggested they do because, by the way, we suggest it because it works.
Yes.
So that's great. But you'll think at some point that go from just executing the tactics to understanding the system and the philosophy and the connective tissues such that then you can then apply those general principles, right? Apply principles to a problem you haven't seen before.
Yep. So look. Let's start with this. Yes, to get ready for an executive level interview, you do go over your general store preparation. Now, by the way, folks, if you don't know what general store is and you're listening as an Executive Tools member, you have access to our interviewing series as part of your license. And the general store is the way we recommend you prepare your accomplishments and understanding what skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics were required in that accomplishment so that you can then apply them to different jobs that require the same skills, traits, abilities, and characteristics. So again, it's free to you if you're listening to this. So please use the general store analogy, use the interviewing series for at least the fundamental part of the interview where they're going to ask you about past accomplishments. And look, you're probably going to have some new accomplishments from your most recent jobs that you'll need to plan out answers for. That's inevitable as you continue to, you know, if it's been 5 years since you interviewed, you probably need to update the examples you use in your interviews. I'm always surprised when people say, oh yeah, that's right. I guess I should do that. I think sometimes people think, oh, I did the general store once. I got it. But 10 years later, heck, some people are, it's 15, 18, 20 years later. Right? They need to do the general store analogy all over again to get ready for the new interview. But anyway, and yes, in addition to doing that, practice your interview answers. Tell me about yourself. You know, what is your weakness, right? Compensation, multiple significant accomplishments. You're going to have to talk about that. Again, those best align to the role based on your analysis, which is probably not perfect, but it's probably close enough. Now, to answer the unspoken question, when I told a few people about this, about the Black Widow had an application in interviewing, they said, so it should be all executive level stuff, huh? I said, no, you still have to do this work for executive level interviews. You still have to go back through your recent history, your past accomplishments, and come up with answers and practice those answers so that you can show that you have prepared well. This kind of preparation is foundational for all interviews. Execs don't just go in there and wing it. They don't. Now, I will say as a caveat to that, if you're being interviewed as chief executive officer, that interview is very different, okay? And you probably don't need a general store analogy exercise to go through to be ready for that job. But I will tell you, if I was competing with you, I would still do it. And I'd probably get the job. Okay. But to overcome the Black Widow interviewing mistake, it's obviously not enough. To address the executive level questions and to avoid the Black Widow interviewing mistake, you must be willing to have answers to questions that don't have right answers. And that means figuring out what questions you might be asked relative to the new, more strategic portion of the job you're interviewing for. You're going to be asked questions about what your plans might be for the group that you're going to be in charge of. What's going to be your product strategy or your sales strategy? You cannot assume, folks. I assumed that my boss didn't come up with the strategy, so I'm just going to use whatever he does because that's what the company told me. No, when you get to the executive level, people have different strategies. Different executives go about things different ways. You have to believe in the way you're doing it rather than just accepting the granted wisdom from above and saying, this is how we do it here. What about your sales training approach? Maybe you think that needs to change. What will be your approach to new competition from a completely different industry? No one ever seems to get this, that when industries are decimated by new competition, it's not one of the companies that's in the industry, it's somebody different. Think about phones replacing cameras. Nobody saw that coming. Leica and Minolta and Kodak, they didn't see those things coming, right? GPS replacing paper maps. I'm sure the paper map company thought that somebody would come up with a better way to map things, but that wasn't it. And I bet they didn't have satellites in that answer either. What about Amazon gaining on Walmart? Walmart probably did not think, and probably didn't think for a few years after Amazon had started, although their response since then has been fantastic. They didn't think they're going to be surpassed in retailing by somebody who doesn't have retail stores. They were effective because of their stores and because of their logistics and distribution centers. Interestingly enough, of course, because Amazon is also in the selling business, they have distribution centers too, a lot of them. And they learned a lot from Walmart, believe it or not.
We should have a segment that we do every once in a while where we talk about our experiences and share all the stuff that we had to deal with in our executives' careers that just no longer exist. Because as you're talking about that, I was thinking, what about Yellow Pages? Like phone companies didn't see it. Yellow Pages were a big, big deal for phone companies.
Huge revenue source, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And most audience doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. Some people don't. I think there's a thing on Instagram where parents take an old rotary phone and give their kids a phone number and say, can you figure out how to use it? What about Ubers versus taxis? You know, taxis are essentially a huge revenue source for major cities. And so the cities auction off badges. I'm forgetting the exact name. Medallions. And in New York City, for a long time, there were $1 million for a medallion. I might have been $2 million. And now I suspect they're not as much. I remember the first time Sarah and Kate and some others in our company were using Ubers and I was still using taxis. And then I got in a taxi for what was very nearly my last time in a taxi because it was just horrible. It was terrible. And the taxi driver asked me to hand my phone, my new iPhone, through the plexiglass so he could use it to get to the address I was giving him because he didn't know the address. I was at O'Hare. I was going to Rosemont, which any of you frequent travelers know. You can see the buildings in Rosemont. You can't see downtown Chicago, but you can see, maybe on a very clear day you could, but on any day at O'Hare, you can see Rosemont. And I'm just saying, we're just going right over there. It's like the first exit.
I remember I was with you when this happened.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And they didn't expect ride sharing to take over a governmentally controlled industry that was basically a license to print money.
So if you're an executive, you're supposed to see these things coming. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Maybe that's why they still say you should be able to see around corners. I don't know. Well, here's another thing. What effect will AI have on your staffing? Right? I mean, you should know. You should have an opinion about that. Now, by the way, folks, you may have good strategies for all this stuff, and they might not like them. You may say, AI is not going to affect my staffing. Well, the person who's interviewing you is using AI to cut his staff by 20%. He's not going to think you're going to be a good executive if you're saying, nah, it won't affect me. Right? Just not. Now, who knows whether he's right or you're right? It doesn't matter. You have to have thought through these things.
Yeah, in some cases, it doesn't matter if you're right or not. The question is, what's your thought process? Can you walk somebody through it?
Yeah, exactly. How will you address supply chain problems relative to rare earth, the constriction of rare earths being mined and distributed around the world because of China's dominance in that area? And another one, assuming that we have this particular technology stack right now, how will you steer us through changes in the next 5 years? What do you think this technology stack means for us in the next couple of 3 years, if you're involved in a way in technology? These are all totally legitimate questions. And they come out of left field and say, well, I hadn't really thought about it, but I think maybe this or that. If it appears you're pulling your ideas out of the air and you haven't thought about them, then you haven't thought about them. And that means you're not thinking the way executives should think. And why should we bet on you? Remember, you're going to have a lot more authority, a lot bigger risk, and you're going to have less guardrails, and we're not going to have time to oversee you. And suddenly, it's not a good thing.
Yeah. And it goes without saying that one of the things people are looking for from you is a willingness to have an opinion.
Yes.
And a willingness to state your opinion and explain it, right?
Yes. And maybe your one isn't the one that's picked and somebody else's is picked and theirs is wrong. And maybe they'll come to your second or third. But you have to be willing to speak. As I say, and in fact, I was at a recent management meeting of one of our client companies, and they used one of manager tools or executive tools guidances, which is one of our comments, which is, the price of your attendance at this meeting is your voice. You don't get to sit there and just listen to other people talk as if they're executives, and because you're at the table, you are too. No, you're supposed to chip in. Now, to prepare for these questions, you must come prepared with a future strategy for the role as you see it. And not just a strategy, but operational plans that you believe will be necessary to achieve your strategy. Most people don't understand this. Strategy is not just a future destination. It is everything that is needed to get there. Strategy, if you're driving from LA to New York, you can't just say my strategy is New York and we're going northeast. It means what kind of car, what kind of fuel mileage, where are we refueling? Are we going to use an electric vehicle? And if so, what's the range? And how much will that affect our fossil fuel consumption? And so on. And people don't think that. They just say, my strategy is basically AI. That's not a strategy. It's not. It might be the overarching idea. Yeah, hope. I think there's a book, a really good book by a general around the Iraq War, one of the Iraq Wars, called Hope is Not a Method. Yeah. Now look, here's an example. Suppose you're a senior project manager in a construction company. Your company installs electrical and sometimes electronic components that go into all kinds of buildings, schools, hotels, multifamily housing, mixed-use commercial properties where they have residential and commercial together. Maybe there are apartments or condos above a retail area which has shops and so on, so that people don't have to have a car. They can shop and eat and so on without driving. You've worked your way up from the bottom. You served as a line worker, a foreman, a superintendent, a project manager, and now you're the senior most project manager in your division. You're essentially the highest ranking person other than the general manager. And so the next role for you, obviously, in your progression is to be a GM for one of your company's local or regional offices. Now, as a senior project manager, you are responsible for overseeing 5 to 7 projects at a time in the large city you live and work in. Up until now, you've been responsible for seeing that the work gets done on all of your construction sites to a high quality, to standards. And you also serve as your company's representative to the builder of the whole thing, the general contractor, or GC, who is, again, building the entire project. You supervise the quality of the work, and you work out the inevitable challenges and issues that come with multi-million-dollar construction efforts. if you haven't been with us that long, folks, a couple of years ago, my book of the year was called How Big Things Get Done. And it basically was an indictment of all construction, but also of many other areas where we spend lots of money on very big projects, to include IT projects as well, and governmental makeovers and so on. And it is basically never a straight line when it comes to construction. Rainy days make a difference. Hot days make a difference in some places in the country. You're also responsible for training your junior PMs, constantly working with the finance group to make sure your projects are staying profitable. For instance, as an example, to give you an idea of scope, the total cost of construction of one of your projects might be $80 million. And your electrical portion of that is $8 million. And if you don't think there's a lot of oversight, not just by the GC, but by the investors and by the company who's going to take over this once you're done building it, if you don't think those people are very interested in how things are being done, you're crazy. That's a lot of money to risk. But that's your job as a senior PM. As a GM, taking over your boss's job, you will have responsibility not just for managing the projects, but also growing the top line, right? The total revenue of your department, your division, your group, whatever, and also the bottom line. You can't just grow the top line. You also have to make it profitable. You will have to sell your services to those general contractors. You'll be responsible for bringing in new business, something you have never, ever done before. You will have to bid for and win that business. You'll have to maintain relationships with all of the GCs in your city. You'll oversee hiring at all levels for your department. You will become your department or division's representative to corporate headquarters, which is politically fraught with danger. You'll have to answer questions about your projects and your progress on them. You'll also have to know the status of every one of your projects backwards and forwards, inside and out. You'll have to submit and defend your budget, which will include projections for each quarter's top and bottom lines in the next year. And you've probably never had a budget. You certainly never had a P&L if you're a senior project manager. And you will have to have tough conversations with your bosses when you fail to meet your budgeted projections. If you haven't figured it out already, the difference between a senior project manager and a general manager is very different. So wouldn't it make sense then that your interview preparation would be very different, right? It would. Now, in our example, it would be completely reasonable and frankly, probably necessary for your interviewer, who could be the president of the company or the regional general manager or both, because your job is so important, to ask about your ability to handle many of these top-level responsibilities. But remember, you might have been exposed to these responsibilities, these activities. You might have helped your boss handle some of them, might have even created reports that your boss used for these efforts, and maybe your boss even clued you in on what the subtleties were in the reports that they were technically correct, but they weren't what he wanted to send forward because they didn't show things in the light he wanted to, because you can, in fact, produce a correct, true report that highlights different things for different reasons. You've been associated with all those things. You've been around all those things, but you have never done them before, and you certainly have never been responsible for them before. Now, look, you might think at this point, that's not much different. What you're describing, Mark and Mike, is not much different from any other job interview I've ever had. I've always been interviewing for roles greater than mine, and I have not actually done many of the tasks that my boss is doing when I'm interviewing for his job or her job. Again, I'm going to say it again. Hopefully, members of the Manager Tools community will see this as a reminder about the value of delegation to your number two, and even more than that. But look, interviewing for an executive role is different in this way. The tasks you'll be responsible for in this new role are now not only bigger, they're strategic versus just tactical. They require decision-making about external factors like customers and sales and the marketplace. As a senior PM, you were largely responsible for tactical implementation of these larger strategic efforts. Again, you've been exposed to it. You've heard your boss complain about it. You've seen him or her do what they do for that job that they have. But that makes this move that you're making from senior PM to general manager, not only a change in scope or scale in terms of size, but also of state. These external factors are fundamentally different than your largely internal processes and systems you worked within as a senior project manager. You won't, as the GM, simply be doing more or bigger of what you've done before. You'll now be responsible for tasks that you've never done before. What's more, it's possible, probable, frankly likely, that you will have many more choices than you have had before, and you have never had to wrestle with multiple choices which had existential impacts on your division. Projects, yeah. Okay, one project you could hypothetically screw up. The whole division? No, that's different. A division can survive one bad project. A division cannot survive one bad general manager. Another way of thinking about this and how to prepare is, as a manager, you're responsible for results and retention. But as an executive, you're responsible for growing results and identifying future leaders. In other words, not just results, but growing results, not just retention, but not only retaining those people, but also developing them into future leaders. If you go into the interview with a managerial mindset, you won't be prepared for the broader scope that an executive interview addresses. It's as simple as that, and we see it all the time. So again, we come to the crux of the difference in your interview preparation. What questions can I expect to be asked about these strategic issues, and how will I answer them?
Yeah. So how do we get started with that?
Yeah. So make it really easy. I'm going to overly simplify this. We're going to have a couple of more Black Widow interviewing mistake examples and stories in the coming months and years for executive tools. But ask yourself two simple questions. What is my plan for growing results? And what is my plan for identifying and growing future leaders? It's a little bit more complicated than that. But for now, since we only have a one or two part podcast here, let's just leave it at that just to start with. Okay. Now, believe me, that's plenty.
That's plenty. Yeah.
There's going to be 30% of the people who are listening to this who won't get past those two basic ideas.
If you got those two, you'd be in pretty good shape, actually.
Yeah. So for the first question, what is your plan for growing results? You have to decide what you believe. Not what you read in a book, not what you can find from manager tools, not what you can find in an MBA program. What you believe is the most effective way for you and your division to grow. Now, I'm going to give you some examples from the conversation I had with a senior project manager. Is it more contact with the general contractors? Because they're the ones that control your budget, if in fact they want to work with you or not. Is it different contact with those GCs? Maybe your boss has one way and you want to do it differently. How will you specifically strengthen your relationship with those general contractors? Is it by giving them more information about your progress? Or is it by learning from their people on job site what matters to them? Will you spend more time in industry events where you would run into more of them and sort of get a chance to meet them and then say, I'd like to bid on your work. We're not working with you right now. Will you study more in the business press about what the GC's company's plans are? Will you systematize your connections with them, capturing and planning them on a customer spreadsheet? If your job's sales, why wouldn't you identify them as customers? Why wouldn't you think like a salesperson about how often have I talked to this potential customer? By the way, what are you going to do to strengthen relationships with existing general contractors? And that might include improving the quality of work that's done on your jobs. Now, that might be an easy one for you because you've been focusing on the quality of the job being done at the sites through your job as a senior PM. But now you're doing it not just because you want to make your guys, your teams better, but because you believe it will lead to sales improvement.
Yeah. Well, and you better not be pick that option because it's familiar to you.
Yes, exactly. Great point. Yes. Will you talk to your fellow general managers about what they're doing? Will you ask them for referrals to other GMs? Will you ask other GMs in your company for referrals to the general contractors they're working with? Are you planning on getting more business from existing relationships? It's always easier to grow existing relationships from grow your revenue from an existing customer who's already satisfied with your work. Or are you going to build new relationships? And if so, with whom and how? And for all of these potential solutions, you must be able to sketch out, at least in a broad way, what tactics you intend to implement to make your plan work. It may not be the exact detailed same 100% identical tactics you use once you're in the job. Maybe 10 or 15 or 20 or 30% of it has to be modified. But you have to have a point of view. You have to have a belief about what it will take. And up until now, your job hasn't required you to think that way. Look, perhaps your present general manager, your existing boss, is an expert at this. And maybe that's why he's getting promoted to be a regional GM somewhere else. Who knows? Perhaps you can simply continue his plan for the next 1 to 2 years. But keep in mind, if you say that, it's a relatively weak answer to questions to how you will lead your division in the future. Your interviewers will know that at some point your present boss's plan will not be sufficient because everything is changing, always. What all this boils down to is you have to be willing, in your interview, to state a course of action for the future, and you will probably not know whether or not your interviewer will agree with your plan, nor whether it will work. But you are still obligated to have it. Because the one thing that will cause you to fail in an executive-level interview is to not have a plan, because you fear you don't know what the right plan or the approved solution is. The lesson here, of course, is that there is no right plan. There is none. The right plan doesn't exist. Everybody's got a plan until they get hit. When you're being evaluated as an executive, the assumption is that you will face situations for which there's no single best plan or right answer, and yet you still will be required to choose.
High seas beware.
Oh, yeah. I've been saying this for years. Most people value not being wrong over being right. That's why one of our future executive tools casts is going to be called the donut-shaped minefield. Are you willing to go through the minefield to get to where you need to go?
Oh, you can't do that to me, man. All night I'm going, what donut-shaped donut?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll think about that.
You're in the donut hole with a platoon of people. You've been told, I shouldn't give this away, but I will. You're in the middle of a donut-shaped minefield, and you have a platoon of 30 people, and you've been told by midnight you have to be on the ridge 500 yards away to hold the ridge with several other units to your left and right. If you don't get there, everyone potentially could die because the failure of the ridge would mean that ultimately they're going to come. If you choose to stay in the donut, you may not die from minefields, but you might die because you're not where you're supposed to be, and that will cause our defensive positions to fail, and the enemy will overrun us. Now, you have a choice. You can stay there. Your goal is to get to the top, to stay alive and get to the top of the ridge. The problem is, in order to get to the top of the ridge, you have to risk dying. And so the question becomes, what are you willing to do? And you'd be surprised how many people say, nope, I'm good here. I'm responsible for the lives of my people, so I'm going to stay here.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Now, look, guys, don't worry about whether your plan is right or not. Worry about not having a plan. Managers crossing into executive roles must be willing to embrace the uncertainty of the role and have the courage to state clearly what they intend to do about it. You may be right. You may be wrong. But you won't get the chance to find out if you don't have the courage to say what you intend to do. That is at the heart of the Black Widow interviewing mistake relative to executive interviewing.
That's a good one.
Yeah. So let me sum up. The Black Widow interviewing mistake has killed thousands of careers, folks. I've seen it happen many, many times. Too many promising professionals thought that all they had to do was what they'd always done before. They came out of their interviews thinking they did well, only to discover they didn't come across as executive level thinkers because they didn't think they needed to plan before they started. Start thinking now about what you would do in your boss's role. Ask yourself, when an evolution completes, what would I have done? Ask yourself, if I had her job tomorrow, how would I proceed? That's good training for getting ready for that executive interview to avoid the Black Widow interviewing mistake.
That's awesome. Thank you.
My pleasure.
All right, everybody. Thank you, and we'll see you next time. So long.